She arrived at the altar thinking love had won. But as she looked into his eyes, a cold certainty settled in her core. Over the past months, every friend had slipped away, every memory felt altered, and she struggled to recall conversations that once mattered. Today was meant to be joyful. Instead, whispers of doubt circled her heart. Was this moment hers at all? He'd perfected the performance, staged text messages, hidden phone calls, rewritten her past so thoroughly she felt untethered from her own life. And as the guests watched, the final act of deception was about to unfold in plain sight. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. It started with small things. Rachel couldn't pinpoint the exact moment when her world began to shift. Maybe it was the canceled girls' brunch, or the cryptic text from her best friend Claire saying, "You've changed. I can't do this anymore." Rachel had read it over and over, the words dissolving into confusion. She hadn't changed, had she? Ethan, her fiancé, always had a calm answer. "She's jealous," he said, brushing a hand over her cheek. "Claire's always resented how close we are. You know that." He kissed her forehead. His touch was grounding, warm, but her chest still felt tight. At first, she tried to reconnect. Calls went unanswered. Messages were left on read. Her co-workers grew distant. Her social calendar thinned. Even her mother seemed hesitant, asking odd questions like, "Are you okay? You haven't sounded like yourself lately." But Ethan always had a reason, a story, a calming presence. When Rachel's phone history suddenly showed long calls to unknown numbers she didn't remember making, Ethan chuckled and chalked it up to a glitch. When photos from college vanished from her cloud storage, he blamed a phone update. "Technology messes up all the time, babe," he'd say with a shrug. "Don't stress about it." But it wasn't just glitches. The apartment shift. They moved into a new loft 6 months before the wedding. Ethan wanted a clean slate. "New life, new space," he said, and it sounded romantic. But something was off. He took over decorating, choosing colors, furniture, even which books of hers to display. The couch was stiff and colorless. The walls were a muted gray. Every trace of her old life seemed to vanish. Her grandmother's vase, packed away. Her vision board. "Too chaotic," he'd said, folding it into a trash bag without asking. He even changed the locks after a break-in scare, though Rachel didn't remember anything being stolen. From that point on, she needed his permission to reset the alarm. "I just want you safe," he said, eyes tender. "The world's not like it used to be." She believed him. She wanted to believe him. Love had to mean trust, right? The subtle rewrite. Rachel once tried to reach out to her college roommate, Gina, after months of silence. She typed a long apology message, hoping to rekindle something. But before she could hit send, Ethan walked in. "You don't need to talk to her," he said, calmly pulling the phone from her hand. "She told me what she said about us. She's toxic." Rachel froze. "Wait, what did she say to you?" "She messaged me. Said I was manipulating you. Can you believe that?" He showed her screenshots. Harsh words. Accusations. Her stomach churned. But something didn't feel right. The tone wasn't Gina's. The phrasing didn't match her voice. Rachel had known her for a decade, and why would Gina go to Ethan, not her? Still, the evidence was on his phone, and Ethan never lied. At least, not that she could prove. Memory slips. Soon, the doubt crept into her mind like fog. She'd walk into a room and forget why. She'd swear she'd had a conversation with her sister about the bridal shower, but her sister said it never happened. Rachel began recording voice memos to herself, hoping to catch reality slipping between the cracks. But Ethan found the recordings. "I'm worried about you," he said, holding her phone. "You're starting to spiral. You need to slow down." She nodded. Maybe she was overthinking. Planning a wedding was stressful, but then why did she feel so alone? The therapist. Rachel made an appointment with a therapist, quietly, through a work friend's referral. She didn't tell Ethan. During the session, she broke down. "I feel like I'm disappearing," she whispered, like I'm not the one living my life anymore. The therapist nodded slowly. That's a common symptom of gaslighting. Has anyone made you feel like your memories aren't real? Rachel hesitated. Yes, she whispered. They made plans to meet weekly. For the first time in months, she felt a flicker of clarity. But 2 days later, she got a call from the clinic. I'm sorry, the receptionist said. We have to cancel your future sessions. Your fiancé called. He said you'd had a mental health episode and asked us to halt treatment. Rachel froze. I never said that, she managed. Silence. Oh, the receptionist said quietly. I'm sorry. I'll check with the therapist directly. That night, Ethan made her favorite dinner, lit candles, poured wine. You're so beautiful when you're not anxious, he said, brushing her hair from her face. Let's not ruin us with outside noise. The wedding countdown. 2 weeks before the wedding, Rachel's brother called her. He sounded frantic. Why didn't you tell me you lost your job? He asked. What? He paused. Ethan said you got fired last month, that you've been staying home to rest? Rachel's stomach dropped. I'm still working, every day. What are you talking about? More lies, more distortions. She opened her computer and started checking email threads, calendars, even her phone's location history. The patterns were off, gaps in her days, photos deleted, old messages gone. And then she found it. A hidden folder on her laptop titled Rachel 2. Inside were screenshots, photoshopped messages, fabricated group chats, a fake email thread where Claire supposedly called her a burden, time-stamped photos from parties she never attended, with her face awkwardly pasted in. Rachel slammed the laptop shut and vomited. The breaking point. The night before the wedding, she confronted him. I found the folder, she said. Ethan didn't flinch. He looked at her like a parent would a troubled child. You're not well, he said gently. That's a backup folder. You've been having blackouts, remember? She stepped back. Number, I remember everything now. He tilted his head. Do you? Rachel locked herself in the bathroom. All night, she rehearsed what to do. The venue, the guests, the vows. She had to say something. Someone had to see what he'd done. But would they believe her? The morning light was too bright. Rachel stared at herself in the hotel mirror, trying to recognize the woman looking back. Her eyes were bloodshot. Her hands trembled slightly as she fastened the pearl earrings her mother had given her. The dress fit like a dream. Ivory silk, sweetheart neckline, lace cascading down her arms like vines. But she didn't feel like a bride. She felt like a character in someone else's fantasy. And that someone was Ethan. Outside, the team of wedding coordinators buzzed through the suite like bees, hair, makeup, bouquets, all scheduled to the minute. Her bridesmaids, only two left now, were downstairs. She barely knew them anymore. Claire should have been her maid of honor, but Claire had vanished, pushed out by Ethan's lies. Rachel took a breath and picked up her phone. She scrolled through her call history again. Still no response from her brother, no message from her therapist. She was alone. At least, for now. She reached under the bed and pulled out a small flash drive. Inside was everything. The fake screenshots, the email trails, the altered photos. She had printed backups too, tucked beneath the lace folds of her veil. If she was going to do this, she'd have one chance. Arrival at the venue. The venue was perfect, almost too perfect. A glass house surrounded by manicured gardens, sunlight filtering through stained windows, golden chairs in rows, guests dressed in pastel smiles. Ethan was already there, standing at the altar. Tall, clean-cut, the very image of stability. His groomsmen flanked him like loyal soldiers. Everyone looked at Rachel as she entered. She walked slowly, her father gripping her arm, but even his grip felt unfamiliar, like she was being guided toward a trap. And still, she smiled, because this was the show, and Ethan loved a good show. The ceremony begins. The officiant spoke in soothing tones, his voice echoing in the glass hall. We are gathered here today to celebrate the union of two souls. Rachel barely heard it. Her pulse thudded in her ears. Her bouquet felt like iron in her hands. Ethan turned to her, eyes shining. His smile was perfect, too perfect. "I've waited for this day since the moment we met," he said during the vow exchange. "I know," she whispered back, eyes locked on his. "And you made sure nothing could stop it." He flinched, just slightly. Rachel's vows. When it was Rachel's turn, she took the microphone in both hands. She was supposed to read from the paper Ethan had helped her write last week, his version of her love, but she had rewritten it. She took a breath. "I want to thank everyone for being here. I know you've all traveled far, and some of you haven't seen me in a long time. Maybe you've noticed that. Maybe you've wondered why." A few people shifted in their seats. She turned slightly, scanning the crowd. Her brother had just walked in, late. He stood in the back, watching closely. "I thought I was losing my mind," she said. "I thought my friends were abandoning me, that I was unreliable, forgetful, even unstable." Whispers began, murmurs among the guests. "But then I found the folder." She reached beneath her veil, pulled out the envelope, and held it up. "This is a record of every lie Ethan told in my name. Fabricated conversations, deleted emails, photoshopped memories." Gasps. Ethan's face remained frozen, but his eyes changed. That calm glaze cracked for just a second. "Every time I asked questions, he called me paranoid. Every time I noticed something strange, he had a story. He made me doubt my own mind." Now the audience was still, dead quiet. "Gaslighting," she said. "That's what it's called." She placed the envelope on the altar like an offering. "And today, I'm done letting someone else write my story." The collapse. Ethan stepped forward, his mask slipping. "Rachel, you're not well," he said. "Let's not make a scene. You've been under so much stress." Rachel looked him dead in the eye. "I'm not the one who made fake texts to cut me off from everyone I loved." He turned to the guests. "She's sick. She's making this up. We can show you her recordings, her therapist's notes." "I never gave him access to any of that," she cut in. And then her brother stepped forward. "I called the clinic," he said. "They said Ethan impersonated Rachel to cancel her treatment." A ripple of horror moved through the room. "Check your phones," Rachel said. "I emailed copies of the folder to every one of you this morning." People started pulling out their phones, reading, scanning. Gasps turned to anger. One of Ethan's groomsmen took a step back. The officiant closed the book. "I think we need to stop here." Aftermath. Rachel walked out of the ceremony, veil trailing behind her like smoke. She didn't cry, not yet. She didn't speak. But as she reached the edge of the parking lot, Claire was there, waiting. "I got the email," Claire said softly. Rachel nodded. Her voice cracked. "I thought I lost you." "You didn't." They hugged, tight. And for the first time in a year, Rachel felt real again. Behind them, guests filtered out, confused and shaken. Ethan stood at the altar, alone, his mask in pieces. The wedding was off, but the truth had finally been witnessed. Rachel once believed her relationship with Ethan had been built on love, but after the wedding debacle, a new question took root in her mind. Had any of it been real? The aftermath wasn't the end. It was only the beginning of a long unraveling, of memories, moments, even pieces of her own identity that had been quietly altered during their time together. Now she had to retrace her steps. The first year, the perfect man. When Rachel met Ethan 3 years ago, she thought she'd hit the jackpot. He was attentive, supportive, and impossibly understanding. A little too understanding, in hindsight. He remembered every detail she ever told him. Her childhood fears, her strained relationship with her dad, her love for Rachmaninoff piano pieces. He mirrored her, perfectly. Looking back, she realized he didn't just listen. He adapted, became the man she thought she needed. He didn't challenge her opinions, he echoed them. He didn't offer his past, he borrowed hers. It wasn't compatibility, it was mimicry. By the third month, he'd memorized her schedule, cooked her favorite meals without asking, and quietly suggested she stop seeing a few draining friends. They don't get your growth, he said once. But I do. She thought it was love. It was control. The second year, subtle isolation. The changes were gradual. Ethan didn't forbid her from seeing people. He gently discouraged. He always had proof that someone was a bad influence. A forwarded text here, a screenshot there. Look what Claire said about you, he whispered. I didn't want to show you, but you deserve the truth. When Rachel started to pull back from her friends, Ethan praised her. You've become so much more centered, he said. But what she didn't notice then was the slow silence that followed. Her phone buzzed less. Her weekends grew emptier. Her conversations became shorter. When she questioned it, Ethan said people grow apart. In reality, he'd manufactured that distance, faking messages, manipulating stories, telling others she was mentally fragile, while telling her they were the ones who were unreliable. The apartment surveillance. Their first shared apartment had seemed cozy until it began to feel like a cage. Rachel remembered feeling watched. Once, she joked that he always knew when she was about to get up or when she took a nap. He smiled and said, "You're predictable in the best way." But it wasn't predictability. After the wedding, when Rachel reviewed her old laptop and devices with a tech-savvy friend, the truth came out. Keyloggers, screen mirroring apps, audio recordings. Ethan had been monitoring her digital life for over a year. Everything from her therapy notes to her online journals had been accessed. Private texts to her sister had been read, altered, or deleted entirely. Even her Spotify playlists had been tweaked, small adjustments that made her question her preferences. It wasn't just emotional manipulation. It was full psychological warfare. Fabricating her past. Ethan didn't just change her present, he tampered with her past. After the failed wedding, Rachel met up with former friends who had grown distant. Some were still hurt, some were confused, but many had one thing in common. They'd received disturbing messages from Rachel's accounts, cold rejections, accusations. Leave me alone texts she never sent. One friend, Kelsey, said she received a voicemail where Rachel sobbed and claimed to be in a breakdown, but Rachel never remembered making the call. Eventually, they traced it back to a deepfake tool Ethan had used to replicate her voice. Using clips from her old YouTube videos, voice memos, and phone calls, he'd stitched together an audio diary that sounded real, but wasn't. He used it to drive people away, to paint her as unstable, and to solidify himself as the only person who could be trusted. The police report. Rachel hesitated for weeks before going to the police, but with the evidence on the flash drive, the altered documents, and the software logs, she finally stepped into the precinct. The detective was calm but skeptical. You're saying your fiancé altered your digital footprint, impersonated you to others, and psychologically isolated you over 2 years? Yes. He tapped his pen. You were never physically harmed? No. The report was taken. A restraining order was filed. But the case was marked as low priority. Digital coercion at the time wasn't easily prosecutable. Gaslighting wasn't a crime. Fabrication wasn't easily provable to the courts, even with evidence. Ethan was smart, too smart. He left no trace of his own hand, so the case went cold. Rachel was free, technically, but justice was still out of reach. Reclaiming reality. With her therapist reinstated and a support group for survivors of coercive control, Rachel began the hardest part, rebuilding herself. She started from scratch, journaling, voice recording her thoughts, even filming video logs to document her progress. Not to post, just to remember. She kept a whiteboard in her apartment with simple phrases, "You are not broken. Your memories are yours. You are not overreacting." Her therapist helped her understand what Ethan had done, not just lying, but systematically dismantling her ability to trust herself. That kind of control doesn't need bruises. It just needs silence, confusion, and time. It took months before Rachel could look in a mirror and feel sure that what she saw was real. The message from Ethan. 3 months after the wedding, Rachel received a letter in the mail. No return address. Neatly typed. Short. You overplayed your hand. They'll never believe you, but I'll always know who you really are. There were no fingerprints, no evidence, just a final breadcrumb meant to shake her foundation again. She didn't cry. She didn't scream. She put the letter in a folder marked "Not Mine" and slid it into a locked drawer. It wasn't her identity. It wasn't her truth. Not anymore. Some hauntings don't come with footsteps or flickering lights. They come through your inbox, your cloud backups, your memories. After Rachel exposed Ethan at the wedding, she believed she could rebuild her life. She believed that once you rip off the mask, the monster disappears. But Ethan hadn't vanished. He'd gone digital, and he was everywhere. The lingering echo. The first sign came through Spotify. Rachel had created a new playlist titled Moving Forward. She'd handpicked every song, uplifting, bold, hers. One morning, a song was added to the list, one she didn't recognize at first, a soft acoustic track, moody, slow. She skipped it. Later that night, it played automatically. When she checked the title, her breath hitched. It was the song Ethan played during their first anniversary dinner. The lyrics were etched in her memory like a scar. You'll never leave me, even when you think you do. She removed the song. The next day, it was back. Hacker or haunter? She contacted Spotify support. They confirmed the activity had come from a login on an unknown device. Same with her email and her calendar. The intrusions weren't dramatic, just small adjustments, shifts, deleted reminders, moved meetings, mysterious calendar invites titled things like memory check and still watching. Her phone once buzzed at 3 a.m. with a reminder she hadn't set. Why did Claire really leave? She froze. Her therapist explained it plainly. Ethan isn't trying to erase you anymore. He's trying to stay alive in your mind. Digital gaslighting. Psychological sabotage. He couldn't control her physically anymore, so he used shadows. The smart home trap. Rachel had installed a smart speaker system in her apartment for convenience. Voice-activated lights, music, reminders. But she began to notice odd behavior. Lights turned off in the middle of the night. A song from Ethan's playlist would start without prompting. Her thermostat would drop 10 degrees suddenly at 2 a.m. She unplugged the speakers, rebooted the network, changed every password. Still, the disturbances continued. Finally, her tech friend came over and ran a full network scan. "You've been cloned," he said. "There's a secondary user mirroring your commands from somewhere else, like another version of you. Another Rachel. A ghost version, created, manipulated, remote-controlled." "I think he copied your voice," her friend said. Ethan had once joked about deep-faking celebrities. Turns out, he wasn't joking. He'd been perfecting the art of digital mimicry using her. The Claire tapes. Then came the USB, unmarked, slipped under her apartment door one rainy morning. Inside, a folder titled Unsent. It was a compilation of video clips and audio memos, most of them appearing to be from Claire, her former best friend. But Rachel noticed something strange. Claire's voice was flat, mechanical. The words didn't match her phrasing. In one video, Claire appeared to be reading off screen. "This is what I really think of you, Rachel," the voice said, emotionless. "You're exhausting. That's why we all left." But it wasn't Claire. It was a simulation. Ethan had used AI tools to fabricate a confession. One so convincing, it made Rachel sob the first time she watched it. Even knowing what he was capable of, her brain still fell for it. That's how deep the programming went. Fighting back. Rachel had two choices, collapse or counterattack. She chose the second. She began documenting everything. Logins, app changes, timestamps. She hired a cybersecurity firm to trace the digital fingerprints. Slowly, methodically, they mapped out the web Ethan had created. And what they found stunned them. He'd built a shadow version of her entire life. A secondary email under a slight misspelling of her name. A duplicate calendar connected to fake profiles of her friends. Even a virtual therapist bot programmed to mimic their sessions. For 2 years, he'd been feeding this system data, keeping it alive, breathing her words back at her. It wasn't obsession, it was ownership. Public exposure. With the help of a lawyer and a tech investigator, Rachel compiled a dossier, a detailed report outlining the abuse, manipulation, and digital impersonation. She pitched it to news outlets. One finally listened. The article went viral. Gaslight wedding, a groom. Digitally rewrote his fiancée's life. People were horrified. Comment sections exploded. Women wrote in saying they'd experienced similar tactics, staged texts, deepfake voicemails, emotional isolation through technology. The police reopened the investigation. Suddenly, Ethan's control slipped. A raid on his apartment revealed hard drives, scripts, voice clips, and an AI simulation program nicknamed Rachel Prime. He had even simulated future conversations she might have with therapists, with friends, with future partners, trying to stay one step ahead, always in control. This wasn't just manipulation. It was premeditated identity theft. The cost of survival. Even after exposure, Rachel knew the damage wouldn't vanish. Her brain still second-guessed herself. Sometimes, she'd pause mid-sentence and wonder, did I actually say that? She no longer trusted her memory alone. Reality required receipts, screenshots, witnesses. She changed phones, switched banks, left the city. But Ethan still haunted the corners of her mind. Not as a man, as a ghost in the machine. It was a Tuesday afternoon when Rachel received the email. No subject line, no sender name, just a message that read, "You're not the only one. Can we talk?" Attached was a blurry photo of Ethan. Not in a suit, not smiling. This time, he looked unshaven, eyes vacant, standing next to a woman with long auburn hair and a nervous smile. Rachel's heart pounded. She hit reply. The meeting. They met in a quiet cafe 3 days later. Neutral ground. Rachel arrived early, eyes darting to every corner of the room. Her therapist had warned her, trauma like hers doesn't just disappear. Even in safety, fear lingers. Then the woman walked in. She looked about Rachel's age, maybe a little younger, slim build, tense posture. Her hands trembled as she stirred her tea, though she hadn't taken a sip. My name's Lila, she said. I was with him before you. Rachel didn't speak. She just nodded, waiting. Lila took out her phone and began scrolling through photos. Images of her and Ethan, only he was going by a different name, Nathan Ellis. I met him in Portland, Lila said. He said he'd just moved for work. He was charming, smart, like a dream. Rachel already knew what would come next, but hearing it from someone else's mouth made the horror settle deeper. The pattern. He told me my friends didn't like him, Lila said. Said one of them texted him privately to warn him I was mentally unstable. I believed him. I cut them off. Rachel's stomach turned. Same script, different city. He moved in fast. Within 3 months, he had full access to my devices. Said he wanted to help organize my digital life. Lila laughed bitterly. Then weird things started happening. I missed a friend's baby shower because the invite never arrived. Found out later it was deleted from my inbox. Ethan said I was being forgetful. Then the messages started. Rachel leaned forward. What kind of messages? Ones I supposedly sent. Angry ones. Cold. To my mom. My ex. My boss. Rachel's pulse quickened. Did you find the folder? Lila blinked. The what? Rachel reached into her bag and slid a USB across the table. You need to see this. Mirroring the monster. Lila's story mirrored Rachel's almost exactly, right down to the staged screenshots and altered photos. But there was one major difference. Lila had gotten out before the engagement. She hadn't stayed long enough to lose herself completely, but Ethan had still done damage, serious damage. She'd lost her job after he sent an email in her name threatening legal action to her manager. She'd spent months in therapy trying to untangle what was real and what wasn't. When Rachel told her about the fabricated Claire videos and the AI replica, Lila froze. I thought I was crazy, she whispered. I thought I was the only one. You're not, Rachel said. Not anymore. The hidden files. Later that evening, Lila sent Rachel a file directory Ethan had left behind when he left her place in a rush. He'd claimed he was heading to a tech conference and never came back. Inside the folder were labeled subfolders: Lila Behavioral, Rachel Timeline, Templates, Voice Training, New Targets. Rachel stared at the list for hours. There was no mistaking it now. Ethan hadn't just manipulated. He had a system, a playbook. Each relationship was a case study. He documented how each woman responded to certain phrases, how long it took to isolate them, what lies worked best, how to slowly dismantle their support systems. He was building profiles, adapting tactics, refining his method with each new victim. He wasn't just cruel, he was methodical, clinical, predatory, taking it to the next level. Armed with this new evidence, Rachel went back to the journalist who had broken her original story. This time, they had more. A second woman, a pattern, concrete files, a digital signature. The journalist pitched it as a follow-up piece. The groom was a predator. One woman's story unleashes a trail of victims. Within days, media outlets picked it up. Podcasts, YouTubers, even true crime networks. Rachel wasn't alone anymore. Neither was Lila. And the more the story spread, the more emails Rachel received. A woman in Austin who said her fiancé had faked a cancer diagnosis to isolate her. Another in Chicago who recognized Ethan's face, but under a different name, Michael. A college student who had nearly dropped out after months of being told she was losing her grip on reality. Each story different, each tactic similar. Ethan was no longer a man with a mask. He was a spider in a web, reaching city to city. The warning. One night, Rachel received another email. No body text, just a subject line. "You think you're safe now?" She didn't open it. She forwarded it to the investigators, and she locked her doors twice that night. Strength in numbers. Lila moved to the city weeks later. They weren't friends, not quite, not yet. But they were something more important. Survivors, mirrors, proof. Together, they started a private online community, not for trauma dumping, but for tracking. A network of digital abuse victims. Patterns were logged, tools were identified, resources were shared. They called it the Unwritten, a nod to all the women whose stories had been stolen, erased, rewritten. The justice system was slow, but public pressure was rising. Rachel knew Ethan wouldn't stop until he was forced to. But now, she had a voice. And she wasn't whispering anymore. Rachel didn't expect justice to come in the form of likes, shares, or podcast episodes. But in a world where traditional systems failed women like her, the internet became her courtroom, and the people, they became the jury. By now, her story was everywhere, but with attention came risk and retaliation. Viral exposure. The follow-up article dropped on a Tuesday morning. By noon, it had over 100,000 reads. By evening, it was trending on social platforms under the hashtag #RewrittenReality. Clips from Rachel's wedding speech resurfaced. Podcasters picked it apart like true crime detectives. Victims of digital gaslighting from all over the world began posting their experiences. The narrative shifted. This wasn't just about Ethan anymore. It was about a pattern, a silent epidemic. Psychologists, tech analysts, and journalists chimed in. The story became more than a cautionary tale. It became a case study. Ethan, meanwhile, had gone silent. No public statement, no appearance, no lawsuit, yet. But people were watching, and so was Rachel. Every day. The counterattack. It came as a whisper at first. A fake Reddit post from a throwaway account accusing Rachel of faking the entire thing for attention, then a YouTube comment claiming she doctored her own screenshots. A week later, an anonymous blog titled "The Gaslight Lie" appeared online. It laid out a twisted counter-narrative that Rachel was an unstable, bitter ex-fiancé who created a deepfake campaign to ruin a man who tried to help her. The blog even included voice memos and emails supposedly from Rachel herself, admitting to the scheme. It was all fabricated, she knew it. But it didn't matter. The damage was instant. People started doubting her again. Not everyone, but enough. Rachel had walked through fire, and here she was, right back at the edge of the cliff, questioning what was real. But this time, she wasn't alone. the power of proof. Lila stepped in first, then came Claire, then a cyber forensics firm, one that specialized in exposing AI-generated content and synthetic identity crimes. They analyzed every file Ethan had created, every memo, every voice clip. They broke down waveforms, metadata, even microglitches in the speech files. The verdict was clear: manipulated. The firm published a 40-page open report online, breaking down how Ethan's audio simulations were created using open-source deepfake software and private recordings. Their conclusion left no room for doubt. The digital materials used to discredit Rachel Carter are forgeries, created using advanced mimicry tools designed for psychological manipulation and control. Suddenly, the narrative shifted again. Rachel wasn't just believed, she was vindicated. Court proceedings begin. Pressure from the public forced authorities to reopen the case. A new prosecutor was assigned. Charges were drafted, not just for stalking or impersonation, but for digital identity fraud, emotional coercion, and unauthorized surveillance. While it was uncharted legal ground, the case was symbolic. Rachel appeared at the hearing in a charcoal gray blazer and no makeup. She didn't want to be styled. She wanted to be heard. In the courtroom, Ethan appeared unchanged, calm, groomed, still trying to perform. But the evidence was overwhelming. And this time, his charm couldn't rewrite reality. The trial was scheduled. Bail was denied. Media circus. The media coverage exploded. Rachel was invited to speak on morning shows, to testify before a cybersecurity panel, even to sit down with a streaming network interested in dramatizing her story. She declined most offers. "I'm not here for entertainment," she told a journalist. "I'm here so no one else has to feel what I felt, that you can't trust your own mind." Still, her face became recognizable, and not always in a good way. At the grocery store, someone whispered, "That's the Gaslight Girl." On the subway, a man approached her and said, "You know, some people think you were in on it." She stared him down and said nothing. Sometimes silence was stronger than proof. Claire's return. One of the quiet victories came from Claire. They hadn't fully reconciled yet. Too much distance. Too many ghosts. But she invited Rachel for tea one afternoon. "I wish I hadn't believed him," Claire said, eyes damp. "I wish I had questioned it sooner," Rachel replied. "Number you were surviving, and you did more than that. You fought back." They hugged for the first time in years. It didn't erase the past, but it gave Rachel something she hadn't felt in a long time. Hope. The interview. A month before the trial, Rachel finally agreed to one interview. A long-form podcast called Mind Trap, known for serious psychological breakdowns of manipulation cases. The host asked her one final question. "What would you say to someone listening right now who thinks they might be in a similar situation?" Rachel didn't pause. "If something feels off, it is. Don't wait for proof. Don't wait until you've lost everyone. Start documenting. Start talking. Gaslighting thrives in silence. And remember, no one rewrites your reality without permission, and you don't have to give it." The courtroom buzzed with low murmurs. Journalists jotted notes. The judge tapped her pen against the bench. Rachel sat at the witness stand, her palms resting flat on the wood. Her heart wasn't racing anymore. It beat slowly, steadily, as if it understood this was not a moment of fear. It was a moment of return. Across from her, Ethan sat in a suit that looked too tight around the collar. His expression was unreadable, the same cool mask he'd worn since the day they met, but his eyes had changed. The confidence was thinner now, fading. He knew this was the end. The testimony. Rachel looked out at the jury. "I want you to understand something," she began, voice calm. "This wasn't about jealousy or obsession. It wasn't just emotional abuse." She reached into her file, pulled out a printed image. It was a screenshot of the deepfake Claire video, the one designed to break her. "This is a forgery," she said. "But it almost worked. It made me doubt the one person I trusted most. It made me believe I was unlovable, that I deserved to be alone. Another pause. Then she looked at Ethan. He used my face, my voice, my name, and twisted them into weapons. And the worst part? He made me the unreliable narrator of my own life. The courtroom was silent. Then she leaned forward, voice sharper now, but not anymore. The verdict. After 5 days of testimony, digital forensics, and witness accounts, including Lila, Claire, and the cybersecurity team, the jury returned, guilty on all counts: stalking, digital identity fraud, emotional coercion, intent to cause psychological harm. The sentence, 12 years in federal prison, with mandated psychological evaluation and permanent restriction from owning or using AI-altering software. Ethan showed no reaction, but Rachel didn't need one. She wasn't there for closure. She was there for truth. And truth, finally, had a voice that couldn't be deleted. 1 year later. The first year after the trial was quiet. Rachel didn't go back to her old life. She created a new one. She moved to a smaller city, started a consulting practice focused on digital trauma recovery, helped women untangle their timelines, reclaim their stories, and rebuild memory in a world designed to distort it. She kept a photo of her wedding dress in a box under her bed, not as a scar, but as proof. Proof that she survived. The conference. At a digital ethics summit in Boston, she was the keynote speaker. The stage lights were warm. The crowd was filled with journalists, researchers, therapists, and survivors. Her speech wasn't long. What Ethan did to me isn't rare, it's just new. As technology evolves, so does abuse. So we have to evolve with it. She looked out over the crowd. The next time someone tells you a victim is confused or too emotional, pause. Ask yourself, what if they're not broken? What if they're being reprogrammed? Applause thundered through the room. Rachel smiled, not the careful, practiced smile Ethan had once loved, but a real one, a free one. Final note, the truth remains. Rachel returned home that night to a quiet apartment. She poured a glass of wine, lit a candle, sat down in front of her laptop, and opened a blank document. Title, Gaslight Wedding, The Groom Who Rewrote My Reality. She stared at the blinking cursor for a long time. Then she began to type, because this time the story was hers, all of it, and no one, not Ethan, not a deepfake, not a digital ghost, could rewrite it again.